WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Before we get to the conversation that you just clicked on, let's peel the curtain back just a bit. In the Loop producer Sienna Greaves is here with me. She produced this episode. Hey, Sienna.
How you doing, Sasha?
I cannot believe we're heading back into election season. Weren't we just here?
Honestly, did it ever really end?
Seriously. You know, but we are 6 months out from the Illinois primary. Lots of big races throughout the state. But the one that everyone seems to be talking about right now, well, it's the race to replace soon-to-be-retired Senator Dick Durbin.
Mm-hmm. And this is undoubtedly one of the most competitive Democratic races in recent years in the state of Illinois, and potentially history-making, right? If Raja Krishnamurti wins, he would be the first South Asian American to hold an Illinois Senate seat. If we have Juliana Stratton or Robin Kelly win, we would see Illinois send its first all-woman Senate delegation to Washington, D.C.
Wow. And of course, let's not forget, we're saying goodbye to Senator Dick Durbin.
Yeah. When Durbin leaves office in 2027, he will leave as the longest-serving U.S. senator in Illinois history.
Wow. Any big takeaways from today's conversation?
A few, you know, beyond the drama and influence and money. I was struck by just how the election process has changed over recent years. And our guest really leaned into that. The impact of technology. Are TV ads enough in the age of social media and streaming?
Right.
How the expansion of early voting has changed the way candidates campaign. It's really moved their timeline up, like something like 6 weeks to get that message out to the masses.
Yes, so many things to discuss. All right. Thanks, Sienna.
Thank you, Sasha.
We spoke to a panel of politicos ready to give their take. Connie Mixon, who's professor of political science and director of the Urban Studies Program at Elmhurst University. Kitty Kurth, who's a Democratic operative and president of Kurth Lampe Worldwide. That's a strategic communications firm. And Jim Durkin, former minority leader of the Illinois House of Representatives. I'm looking at you, Leader Durkin, because you ran this race.
Over 20 years ago.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But tell us about the experience.
It was a great experience. I ran in a primary against a guy named Jim Oberreis, who was his first campaign. And he had the backing of Dennis Hastert at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And also a guy named John Cox, who was kind of a political gadfly, but he was very wealthy, owned Jay's Potato Chips. And then there was me, the state representative, who was making a paycheck, but didn't have the means as both of them. So the primary was fascinating. It was a lot of fun. I won handily, but the general election was a whole different story.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So what do you think that these candidates have to look forward to, especially at the primary stage?
Look, this is about the personal touch that you have to make throughout the state of Illinois, identifying the people that are going to come out to vote. You look at every cycle, and you know that there's a good portion of people who are never going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to figure out where your areas you're going to spend your time.
Yeah.
You can spend a lot of time in a car just wasting hours and not really connecting with people. So I think you got to be very strategic about your time and your place, but also more importantly, in a federal race, It is very difficult to raise money. Most of it is individual money. You can do the PAC money and some of the dark money that's going to come in. But at the end of the day, a lot of it is going to be the hard money that you have to raise, and it's limited on how you can do that.
Yeah.
Unless you are a self-funder, it's very difficult, and you're not going to get the attention if you're not an incumbent.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Dick Durbin. What do you think is the impact on Illinois, having such a powerful presence in Congress?
I think Dick is going to be missed. Dick and I, after we ran, we became very good friends, and we are still our friends to this day. And we disagree on a lot of issues, but I always felt that he was a steady hand and a man that looked at Illinois and also the nation in a balanced manner. He had a job to do as a high-ranking member of the United States Senate, but I've watched him closely over the years with the Judiciary Committee,
mm-hmm.
and he's put fine people on the bench, and that to me is extremely important. But also, if you watched him, he is not a person that is looking to put on a show, as some other people do in the committee, and I think that he projected very strong presence, but also I felt that he was a person that we can be proud of, and I'm glad to call him a friend, and I appreciate the work he's done in his service to the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Don Tracy, who's the former chair of the Illinois Republican Party, is running for Senate. Strong candidate, you think?
He's the strong candidate in the primary.
Okay.
Don is a friend of mine. It's going to be a very difficult, and I've talked to him about the race, and I support him, but it's going to be very difficult to in a midterm election,
mm-hmm.
to run in a blue state and make it competitive. Now, getting the attention of Washington is going to be very difficult as well, because the numbers are just not going to be there. Don's going to have to rely upon his own money and his own fundraising at the end of the day. But here's what the Senate Republican Campaign Committee is going to look. They're going to look at the numbers at some point during the summer to see whether or not what it looks like. Is there any traction? But they're also looking at other states that have cheaper media markets. And it's and they're going to take, and that's what happened with me when I ran against Dick Durbin. They said, "Look, we're going to put our money into Wyoming and the Dakotas, and
Illinois is a little too expensive.
We could spend a tenth of what we'd have to spend in the Chicago and St. Louis market." So
right. This
is a reality. So that's why it's going to be Don will have to self fund.
Yeah, we'll get more into fundraising in just a bit, but let's hear from Connie and Kitty here. Connie, you first. I want to pivot to Juliana Stratton. She was the first Democrat to announce her candidacy. How significant was that?
Well, I think it's significant in that if either she or Robin Kelly end up being elected, they will be the sixth African-American female serving in the U.S. Senate. And if you recall, the very first African-American in the U.S. Senate was Carol Moseley Braun,
right
here from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Only the second was Kamala Harris from California. And so if either Robin Kelly or Juliana Stratton end up winning the election, I think that's historic.
Mm-hmm.
And Stratton, of course, is coming with the endorsement of J.B. Pritzker, which
how big of an
is probably the most significant thing about her announcement is that J.B. right away got behind her.
Talk about that advantage for her.
Well, it's a significant advantage. We'll see what it turns out to be in the end. Right now, the Pritzkers have maxed out on their individual donations, but how much will J.B. Pritzker's super PAC, dark money, 501c4 money, how mm-hmm. much will actually flow to Stratton is still unclear. Right now, she has the least amount of money on hand of the top three candidates between Raja, Robin Kelly. Mm-hmm. Stratton has the least amount of money.
Yeah. Let's talk more about money, Kitty, because we're trying to follow that money. And it looks like Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy has got way more cash than Stratton, more cash than Kelly. Let's talk about that. What's his fundraising strategy?
So first of all, you are totally correct in following the money in any situation,
yes.
Sasha. You know that. Sasha Ann, you know that. the thing about the money that Raja has is why he has it. He is a prolific fundraiser. He's really good at it. He does all his call time. He calls everybody. If he were to meet you this morning, tomorrow morning, you would get a call asking for money.
Oh, wow.
He has an extraordinary network across the United States, and he has a lot of smaller donors that he can go back to again and again and again. On a historic note, he would be the first South Asian Indian American senator. Mm-hmm. So that would be a big deal for the community.
A lot of possible history to be made
here. A lot of possible history. And honestly, for the state of Illinois, Robin Kelly, Juliana Stratton, and Raja Krishnamoorthy are all really good, solid people who will represent us well. Robin Kelly and Juliana Stratton have done have done more campaigning statewide, mm-hmm. so are better known statewide.
They're also vying, I think, for the same voters. Mm-hmm. So who comes out on top?
In theory, yes, exactly. And Juliana Stratton has J.B. Pritzker behind her, but she hasn't historically raised a lot of money herself, and she doesn't have a lot of her own donors. Robin Kelly has been in the game for a long time. She has very loyal supporters, but $19 million makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Durbin says he won't back anyone unless there's a serious reason to step in. What do you think the bar is, Connie?
The bar for him to step in?
Yeah.
I don't think there is one. I think it's not in his interest whatsoever to get involved in this race.
He's like, I'm staying out of this.
I think even the Democratic Slating Committee wouldn't even, they didn't endorse in this particular race.
Any thoughts, Leader
Durbin? No, I think that Senator Durbin would look at either any three of them as good replacements. So I don't think that it behooves him to get involved at this point. I don't know why he would. He's leaving. He's going into the sunset, and no reason to get tied up with these messy intramural scrums that you have in the Democrat primary. But I will just say this: in this type of race, you have a situation with a Raja, and you have Kelly and Stratton could cancel each other out. And I think that that's a concern that they should have, and that's to Raja's advantage.
Yeah, and I think Senator Durbin is a statesman as well as our Democratic leader, but there's no margin for him to step in. Interesting to note, Robin Kelly is touting a lot of endorsements, both from her colleagues in the Congress and from people across Illinois.
Okay.
Neither Krishnamoorthy nor Stratton have any endorsements listed. I know they have them, but she's, I think, really trying to do that organizational part of things, that party organizational part of things. And really, television is going to be a lot less important than it was when Jim Durkin ran.
Yeah.
Now
did someone tell Krishnamoorthy that? Because he's spending on
he's
those ads.
He's spending, and they were pretty good commercials, thought.
They are.
But, part of that is also to get out early, stake your claim. Remember now, we don't have Election Day anymore. We have voting season culminated by Election Day. So it changes a lot the way campaigns spend money, the why and the when and the how of how they spend it.
Mm-hmm. Tell me the issues, Leader Durkin, and I'd love to hear from all of you. I'll just start with you. What's going to impact these races, you think?
The White House. Real simple. It's one person.
Yeah.
It's President Trump.
Trump.
And is how are you going to manage your position in the U.S. Senate
mm-hmm.
to hold your ground and to, you'd like to work with the administration, but I'm not sure if this administration wants to work with any Democrats that are going to be elected. So I think, but this is, he's a very polarizing individual, particularly in a Democrat primary. So it's going to be how they are going to challenge and how they're going to handle the White House and the mm-hmm. operations of Washington, the intrusion of state rights on so many issues, and the, obviously the financial hole that has been created on so many things, whether it's through this tariff policy, but also the big beautiful bill, which has cut a lot of services out, and I think people are still trying to figure out what's in it. So that's really it. I think mm-hmm. it's going to be a referendum against Donald Trump, as it is every midterm election against the sitting administration. So this is no different than any other midterm election. This one,
there's a lot more
polarizing rhetoric, and people are, I would just say people are very unsettled. And I would say that there's a lot of, I think people are scared also about mm-hmm. what's going on, not only domestically, but also on the international basis.
Some of that fear might be on purpose. Connie, you've been nodding.
I think so. I mean, I think voters are going to be making a decision on, of the three top candidates, Raja, Robin Kelly, Juliana Stratton, who is going to be best positioned to stand up to Donald Trump. I think that's what voters are going to be looking for. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in Raja's ads, right? He says he never likes a bully. He's there to stand up against a bully. So he's already, you know, leaning into that messaging.
I think the other thing you need to look at in a primary, you know, there's often low turnout. This is not going to be a low turnout race. It's going to be high voter intensity.
You think so?
Well, if you look at every election that has happened since Donald Trump won in November of 2024, Democrats have been turning out. And I think it's not going to be any different here in Illinois. We are putting the cart slightly before the horse. You know, we don't actually know who the candidates are technically until roundabout November after the challenges are made, December. Mm-hmm. So we're presuming that the candidates are going to be Robin Kelly, Juliana Stratton, and Raja Krishnamoorthy. And they are right now, but
things could shift.
The board may look a lot different in December.
And Leader Durkin, we talked about Don Tracy a moment ago. Any other Republican contenders we should know about?
I have never heard of anybody else who's putting their name in. And this happens. You have gadflies and people who are just going to put their names out for the sake of running. So I don't see any serious competition with Don Tracy. Mm. I would expect him to be the nominee next year.
Yeah. And you sort of alluded to this earlier, but just so we're clear, how likely do you think it would be that Republicans win this seat after a powerful Democrat held it for so long?
I think it's going to be a very difficult task for Don Tracy to win a year from November. It requires a lot more than just the candidate himself. It requires a all-in by the Senate Republican Campaign Committee and the administration. Mm-hmm. And making an investment in Illinois hasn't been a priority for the RNC for quite some time. So,
yeah.
As I said earlier, Don's going to have to make the case for himself, and he's going to have to probably raise and fund himself his campaign in the general election.
Mm-hmm. And in a different kind of election cycle, a Republican might have a lot better chance. But I think the way that it looks the midterms are going to be going next year, I mean, we can't, you know, nobody has a really accurate crystal ball.
Yeah.
But traditionally, as Mr. Durkin said, traditionally the president gets voted against in the midterm year. Mm-hmm.
Dick Durbin, what's the legacy he's going to be leaving behind, Connie?
Well, I think his work on the Judiciary Committee is something that comes to mind specifically for me and touches me quite a bit is his work on the DREAM Act. Before I joined Elmhurst University in 2010, I was a professor at the City Colleges of Chicago. And in the early 2000s, I was bringing students to Springfield. And after 9/11, 2001, there was heightened security in Springfield, and we had to send a list of all of our student names and copies of their IDs. And what I found out was that over half of my students at City College of Chicago were undocumented, and they weren't going to be allowed in to the Capitol in Springfield. And I started working with our state legislators, and ultimately Dick Durbin came and met with my students.
Oh, wow.
And from there, he drafted the DREAM Act, which still hasn't passed, unfortunately. Yeah. But I do feel a personal connection.
What a great
with him.
Story.
Yeah. And I think that's a legacy that he leaves behind, is working on behalf of everyday folks in Illinois, and the fact that a handful of students from inner city Chicago were able to get his attention. I think that says a lot about the man.
I think the biggest thing that we're going to miss with Senator Durbin, which is in short supply in Washington, D.C. these days, is decency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking back to the top three that we've been talking about here, I mean, all are saying that they can stand up to Trump. You know, there are lots of other issues, though. We know Democrats, there's a major image problem right now. Republicans, you can say, have the same issue. Lack of unity, if you will, right? A lot of infighting. Anything else you're paying attention to as these races heat up?
You know, I think that President Trump has done what no Democrat has been able to do in Illinois, but has really, honestly, coalesced Democrats more. You know, it's gotten people to feel better about Mayor Johnson. It's gotten people to look at Brandon Johnson and J.B. Pritzker and Tony Preckwinkle as all being on the same team. I mean, they had the best press conference together that I've ever seen.
Yes. Yeah, that was very powerful. When they said, do not come.
And it was remarkable that they were all together and united.
Yeah.
And I didn't think anybody could unite the Democrats that
way. Just a couple seconds
left. So thank you, President Trump.
You know, yeah, independent voters are always going to be the important voting bloc in every election. And Donald Trump and the far right have taken so many Republicans away from the party and made them independent voters because of their extreme positions. And that's where you're going to have a success for Democrats, because anybody who says that I'm with the Trump team are going to be rejected by those independent voters in Illinois. And a Republican, you know, in the primaries, it's the far right. But there's a growing group of people who've rejected, who were Republicans, who are now independent voters.
Very interesting.
This president needs to understand that his responsibility is to mend the nation. He is the president of the United States, not the president of MAGA or the Republican Party. He is there to say, he's supposed to be the person that pulls the country together like we did after 9/11. He is not doing that right now.
That's a disservice.
WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
Okay, now let's get to what Chicago's talking about. Today on the show, I talked with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, Sun-Times reporter and editor Mitchell Armentrout, and WBEZ Race, Class, and Communities senior editor Alexandra Solomon. So we're going to talk in a few, Claire, about the federal government just really ramping up these immigration raids across the city. But I know the Department of Education is also sending a very clear message, it seems, for Chicago Public Schools. What's going on?
Yeah, this was late last night. The message was a letter sort of demanding that CPS potentially is at risk of losing $6 million in grant money unless it abolishes its Black Student Success Plan. Mm. So the feds are calling that plan discriminatory. They're also calling CPS's policy of allowing students to use bathrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identities discriminatory. CPS has been under investigation for these policies for a couple of months.
Yeah.
But we should note that the Black Student Success Plan aims to improve academic outcomes. But this is also happening in New York City and Fairfax County, Virginia.
Yeah, the Black Student Success Plan, they raised their concerns a few months ago from what I remember. And I'm just surprised to hear we're still at this. They're moving forward. And I'm looking at you, Alexandra, because I know you and me, we're both CPS parents here on the panel. I'm trying to wrap my mind around what something like this would mean for my child in the system.
Well, you know, I think about, my child and also my fellow parents, because this was a plan that was pushed by Black parents. And if you've ever tried to advocate for anything in the CPS system, you know how tough that is, how much time goes into it. You know, this is something that parents want. So I think about that. And then, you know, my kids, I think, benefit when there is equity in the system. My kids
exactly.
can tell you about the inequity that they see with their own eyes.
Yeah.
They talk about it all the time. And so, you know, I'd like to see a system that works for everybody, because I think then it works better for my kids.
Exactly. I mean, let's think about how we got here in the first place, right? That Black Student Success Plan, it wasn't born out of nothing. It was because CPS had this track record that was pretty horrible. It was falling short when it comes to serving Black families, right? Black students, as we know, disproportionately attending racially segregated, disinvested schools. They're affected by more school closures than anybody else. What would be the issue with wanting to change that?
Right. I think, again, improving outcomes for everybody benefits
it's
all
a win
students.
Win win. Well, the education department's given CPS 3 days, just 3 days to comply. So we're going to bring you the very latest here on WBEZ. Let's pivot now, Mitch, to immigration enforcement, because that is really what's taken over our city right now. Yesterday was Mexican Independence Day. What did we see?
Well, it seems like we saw the biggest escalation yet of President Trump's deportation campaign here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say that this is the biggest escalation yet because we haven't really gotten any hard numbers from the federal government on the numbers of arrests. But, you know, just anecdotally talking to immigrant advocates and government officials who have been against this campaign from the start, you know, we just saw raids all over the Chicago area, mostly in the suburbs, mm-hmm. Which has kind of been an interesting little tweak to the start of this campaign. We haven't seen as much. There certainly has been federal presence in the city of Chicago, but yesterday the focus really seemed to be on Elgin. There were reports of arrests in Cicero. The day before was West Chicago.
Yeah.
So it seems like kind of starting the western burbs, potentially working in. We don't actually know that.
Any rhyme or reason as to where they're going?
It's hard to say because, that obviously has been— the federal government is keeping a tight lid on that. And, you know, yesterday the big proclamation from the Trump administration was that Greg Bovino has arrived in town. And he's a Border Patrol official who led the immigration raids in L.A. that prompted a lot of protests. And mm-hmm. now the National Guard response in L.A. And local officials here are worried that that's kind of the playbook that they want to follow
yeah.
in Chicago.
Well, Alexandra, Mitch mentioned Elgin. What happened there yesterday and how's the community responding?
Yeah, so what happened is very early in the morning, around 5:30 in the morning, a neighborhood was woken up to the sounds of helicopters and military trucks in the streets. And, you know, they came to a home. They took a number of people outside of that home, including one U.S. citizen who was questioned by customs and border officials and was eventually let go. But, you know, neighbors said it sounded and seemed like a scene from war. It was scary.
Wow.
People were dressed in tactical gear. And Kristi Noem, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, was there as well. And that was on social media.
On social media. Wow, because that's the priority. You've been keeping listeners up to date on all of what's been happening, all of the latest immigration news this week. Claire, I'm curious what stands out to you, because it's just been a bouncing ball here.
Yeah, I think the emotion we're talking about, the boots on the ground that we're talking to residents, someone describing it as a war zone today, being literally woken
in
up.
In the middle of the night.
That, is, that is wild.
It's
can we acknowledge that? That is absolutely wild.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think something that's worth noting, too, is that the support is ongoing from lawmakers and politicians. Mayor Brandon Johnson signing an executive order aimed at protecting protesters, protecting residents, mm-hmm. as this increase of federal law enforcement continues in Chicago. And that order is essentially directing the city's police department to work with people, work with protest organizations.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important, that that support just keeps coming in and the vocalization of that.
So, Mitch, the mayoral task force, they've got ideas. They're trying to close this $1.15 billion shortfall.
It's a big hole to fill. And this is an independent task force that the mayor convened to basically come up with a lot of the bad ideas that he's going to have to try to sell here in the next few months to get a sometimes rebellious city council to kind of fall in line with or at least get behind a spending plan for next year. Last year was really ugly, and it's not going to get any prettier this year. But basically, this independent task force kind of rolled out a lot of ideas that we've heard before, but kind of are becoming more and more necessary because $1 billion shortfall is
it's a lot.
The biggest in the recent memory, at least. But some of their ideas kind of range from the usual sort of nickel and diming taxes, you know, raising the tax on plastic bags, water bottles, retail deliveries. They've talked about bringing back the corporate head tax, which is really unpopular. It's going to face immediate pushback, if not rejection, from the business community. Also talking about raising your garbage collection bills. But I think the headline sort of that's kind of unavoidable at all this and what the mayor tried to sell last year is that this task force recommended, basically tying property tax increases to inflation each year. So basically raising your property tax bill every year. The mayor says he does not support that at this point. He campaigned against ever raising property taxes. He floated it last
year,
but was roundly shot down by the council. But that's really the biggest takeaway to try and attack a really big
And also
deficit.
Time will tell. Right. Time will tell. All right, Claire, while I have you here, what else is going on this morning?
WBEZ's Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco had a great story this morning about residents in Pilsen who are voicing concern, saying they're worried about a proposal to partially demolish a retired coal plant in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And the reason is this sort of happened about 5 years ago in Little Village, and there was a lack of transparency with the project, and the literally was covered in dust, Little Village, because of this demolition.
That's right.
So I think Pilsen residents being concerned is certainly something to note. The city says they're going to hold a virtual public meeting to answer community questions next Wednesday, so we're going to be covering that. And also, the Cubs have one win to get before clinching potentially a spot in the National League.
I knew I could count on you for that Cubs update.
And it is going to be a first pitch today, 11:34 a.m. So if they do it in Pittsburgh, they we'll see them in the postseason.
Excellent. Alexandra, let's go back to immigration here. Shed a little light for us on the types of resources and explainers that our listeners can find online. They're at WBEZ.org and suntimes.com.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of things to sort of understand about how immigration enforcement works. There are multiple agencies that do it, a lot of laws around how it gets done. So we have some really great materials. We've got an explainer literally on what happens when someone gets detained, what is the process that they go through, where might they get sent after they're arrested here in Chicago, so or in the Illinois area. So there's an explainer on that, how immigration enforcement works. We've got an explainer about workplace raids, what employers, how employers can prepare, what sorts of things people can do with step-by-step there. And we've got another explainer just explaining what the different agencies involved in immigration enforcement are.
Much needed.
So
we're throwing around a lot of big terms
that's
here.
That's right. That's right. And there are even more agencies involved now than there were 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So you can find all of that information at
on the website, WBEZ.org, as well as suntimes.com. Our colleague, Araceli Gomez-Aldana, has also started answering listener questions on the topic too, including this one from Bethany Kozak. The question is, are federal officers or agents required to wear body cameras and visible badge numbers the way that local police do? Very good question, Bethany. What is the answer?
So this question, I think, came out as a result of a fatal shooting that occurred last week. There was a traffic stop, and you know, the Department of Homeland Security claims that he didn't obey commands and that his car dragged an agent and the agent feared for his life. And that's why the agent fired a shot that ended the man's life.
And this was in Franklin Park.
This was in Franklin Park. Now, there is a lot of security footage. Social media advocates have pushed back on that accounting. And the truth of the matter is the agents were not wearing body cams when that happened. So we don't have body camera footage from that event. And there is no federal law that says agents can't wear masks or can't hide their badge ID. Right. Now, there was a pilot program. Our colleagues at the Sun-Times spoke with a former official from the Biden administration. There was a $25 million pilot program that had been put into place to have agents wear body cams, but that's something that the Trump administration ended when they came in January.
All right. Well, before I let you go, real quick, a lot going on here with immigration enforcement, as we've outlined. Give me one big thing that you're going to keep an eye on moving forward. You first, Mitch.
I think the biggest thing is to keep an eye on when federal officials kind of start showing up more en masse in the city proper. Obviously, we've kind of seen a lot of action in the suburbs, but it certainly seems like the drumbeat is headed into the heart of the city. And we'll see when that happens.
Same question, Alexandra.
Yeah, I think, where the operations are going to be, a lot of this has, there's use of social media. They have influencers embedded with ICE agents as they're carrying out operations. So I'm going to be watching how this story gets spun really out there, how it's told on channels and sort of done for media attention, and whether they're going to, you know, come up with new names and that sort of thing for the campaign. So I'm going to be watching that.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.